getting a view into the locker room that you
Except
don't normally
you're
see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hard out to the puck is Wheeler. Back toward the line for Bufflin. Winds up, shoot, stopped in front, rebound! Perreault, a shot, he scores! Matthew Perreault with a power play goal! And the Jets have their first lead of the night. It's 5-4, Winnipeg!
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Not the usual voice or voices you've grown accustomed to. A little bit of a lineup shuffling. New lines today. Or really just one new line. My name is Matt Leibel. It's a pleasure to be with you alongside Dave Minuk and Sean Assor. No Drew, no Richard, and no Ezra. It's either going to be the best Illegal Curve Hockey Show in the history of the show or the worst Illegal Curve Hockey Show in the history of the show, but or somewhere in between. I guess I've basically covered everything. Gentlemen, how are we doing on this Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, this should be an exciting Saturday. We got a new-looking lineup. We got some exciting times, a Jet game ahead to discuss. Lots a Jet game that took place on Thursday that we really want to discuss.
Well, let's touch on that, but let's see if Dave is... We were off to a bit of a rocky start here. Is your mic good now?
I believe so. I think I can hear myself. Yeah, so, well, you know, yeah. I mean, my concern was, like, I'm not sitting in my usual seat.
You
so
told me to sit here.
You needed a computer, so I wanted to switch you up. I'm unused to being in the middle. I'm used to centering. I'm usually on a wing. But no, I'm good.
You're centering today. Are you
I'm
cool?
Centering. I'm good to be. Hey, Matthew Perreault moved to the center. Dave Minuk can move to the center.
How are you on the faceoffs, on the draws?
I'm pretty solid.
52%, 53%?
I would probably go into the 58 range, maybe.
Well, then maybe you should actually fly down to Florida because the Jets are minus a centerman and could use somebody. And that picks up right where you guys were saying we should start the show with Thursday night's game. Of course, we've got action tonight. 6 o'clock start. Jets taking on the Florida Panthers to finish off this 4-game road trip. It's all part of our coverage here on TSN 1290 on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. And we are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pleased to be with you. Until 3 o'clock Thursday night. Pierre LeBrun said yesterday that it was one of the most entertaining games of the entire season, and not just for the Jets, for the entire NHL. And when you think about it, Thursday night's game really did have a little bit of everything, guys.
You want to talk about an emotional roller coaster of a game? You come out, the Jets are down 3-0 again within a span of, 4.5 minutes to close out a very productive first period for the team.
Did you turn it off? How close were you to turning it off?
I didn't turn it off, only because...
I thought about it, though.
I definitely thought about it, and I was killing time before a movie, so I was like, well, I got really nothing else to do but watch this game, see if they'll pack it in. I was really interested to actually see how they would respond. And then when they went down 4-1, that's when I kind of said to myself, well, what else is on? Has Top Chef started? Like, what's going on? So, and then 4-2, 4-3. And then, this is the best part, by overtime, I had to leave to go to the movie.
So I'm assuming the movie was with a feminina.
Oh, a major feminine.
Yeah, so then obviously you've got to make a move there. But who knew an hour before, I mean, you're thinking, I just got to kill time. Yeah. The next thing you know, I got to try and find a later movie.
Oh, tough. It was tough. But I turned my phone on silent. Didn't want to get any updates as to what happened in the shootout. And then a friend texted me. She said, too good of a game to end in a shootout. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know who won in the shootout yet. So this is okay. But yeah, what a crazy game. And what an exciting third period for the Jets.
Unbelievable. Dave, what did you think of it? When they were down 4-1, I'm with Sean. Like I said, I almost turned it off at 3-0, but it's part of my job. And what else was I going to do on a Thursday night? I didn't have a date. I'm married. I haven't had a date in years. And so I'm just thinking, Okay, I might as well watch the Jets game here. And then that third, when it was 4-1 early in the third, I mean, we've watched the Jets for 56 games. Yeah. They were toast. Mm-hmm. But then they weren't, and that was pretty cool.
Well, it was, but unfortunately, I also have an admission to make. I wasn't home. I stayed home for the first two periods, and I thought, here we go again. And, of course, as we all know, the Jets' record is like 0-21 or 22-2 in terms of coming back after being down in after two periods. So I'm like, well, there's zero chance. So I was actually late for a floor hockey game, And I was like, okay, I'll PVR the game and I'll just the third period. And I was even supposed to leave before the second end. I'm like, oh, I'll watch the end of the second. And I think to myself, here we go again. How many times have we seen this before? Like, this is a game, you have a game like that against Carolina. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, you have to come out strong. And then they don't. And they're down 3-0. And you're thinking, where is this team? Where is this team showing up? Because we talked about it on Wednesday's show. We're like, this team has to show up on Thursday night. And then they don't, at least for the first, you know. Now, I shouldn't say that entirely.
They actually thought they were pretty good for 50 minutes, just typically couldn't score a goal.
They did, but yeah, no. I was going to say, unfortunately, the goaltending let them down. Which, you know, I mean, Pavlik himself would have to say those weren't a lot of those goals.
The second goal and the third goal were all on him.
He was doing, like, pirouettes in through the net. I mean, that wasn't a great play on his part. So
can he do us all a favor, just on a side note? Andrei Pavlik should never play the puck in his entire life. For the rest, yeah. I mean, he goes back there. I feel like if I'm an opposing team, I would almost want to dump it in and see him play the puck because he's going to screw up the exchange with the defense. And like Sherratt on that second goal, he does it every time he plays the puck.
And he gives Sherratt the look after they have a candid shot of him just kind of like with the eye up, shaking his head. And so you wonder what form of communication or lack thereof transpired behind that net. But Pavlik tries to push it backwards, Sherratt's going forwards. Maybe just rust from not being in those situations for so long, you know, not getting the reps in practice with playing the puck as well as the team usually does.
The worst part about for me, though, was that we're sitting there playing floor hockey, and then Remus
is
like on the in the side, and he's like, "Okay, guys, it's 4-all," and we're like, "Yeah, Remus, that's very funny. It's not really 4-all." And he goes, "Okay, the Jets just took a lead." We're like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm thinking to myself, like, is this the greatest game ever that I'm – and again, I'm recording it. But still, I mean, it's just – you realize you're missing this game. That was incredible. I went home. Obviously, I watched the third period in the OT and the shootout. It was phenomenal. And it was a great effort. And it's funny how the Jets have these games against Tampa that could be seminal moments of the season. You'll remember last year when they went
– good point, yes.
Had that big game against Tampa.
It all started with the game in Tampa.
That's what I mean. Like, and I've been talking about that on the website for the last couple of days, that they had that pivotal game. And I'm not saying this is going to be a pivotal game or not, but it was interesting how last year they had that game against Tampa. They needed to win. I believe they won 2-1. And now, again, we've got a pivotal game against Tampa. I mean, you could say the Carolina game was pivotal. You could say a lot of the games. But let's just look at the Tampa game and say it was pivotal. And then we'll see what happens, you know, obviously tonight. But it was better to get 1 point than it is to get 0, unless, you know, your focus is on getting a top pick.
Tonight at 6, Jets take on the Florida Panthers. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day, and we're on TSN 1290. But aside from the comeback and the emotional boost and the possible pivotal moment you talk about, Dave, a lot of people came out of that game focused on some of the stuff that happened related to on ice, but also off ice. And I'm talking, of course, that shift where Anton Stralman hit both Nikolai Ehlers and then, of course, Brian Little, and then Paul Maurice and referee Francois Saint-Laurent getting into it, which led, of course, to getting into it again at the start of the third and Maurice getting ejected. And those situations, those moments had a lot of people fired up. And I would argue, probably still a little fired up, even a couple of nights or a couple of days later.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you say Pierre LeBrun says it's the most one of the most entertaining games of the year, I think that event in the Stralman hit followed by the Maurice ejection led to the entertaining factor of that game. That was the major point. He comes out of the third period, and like I love what you and Gary were chatting about, how the refs and the coaching staff have the opportunity to both view that play at the intermission. So they know what happened. Referees know they missed a call. Maurice knows. He let him have it. He sees the play. He comes out, and that GIF, I don't know. How do you even pronounce it?
I think you're supposed to say GIF. Even though it's GIF, I think it's GIF. Okay. Yeah.
The GIF shows, you know, Bufflin and Myers kind of sitting there as Maurice comes out. One word gets spoken, and they're both laughing. So something... they knew something was coming. Maurice came out with the shotgun cocked, ready to go.
And did you hear what Gary learned yesterday? Because he talked to a bunch of people in the building. See, the problem I had with it, guys, was everyone was so fixated, I felt, on Francois Saint-Laurent smirking and smiling at the end of the whole exchange. Mm-hmm. And I needed to know what happened. We were told on the TV broadcast, staring contest. But how does that go down? So Gary found out that, reportedly, Francois Saint-Laurent was at center ice, staring into the Jets bench waiting for Maurice. And that's why Maurice was so fired up, because the first thing he saw coming out of there was the last guy in the world he wanted to see.
Yeah, and I love what Carrie Frazier said, that he had really had no business even looking in the Jets bench direction. He's dropping the opening faceoff, so he should be at the timekeeper's bench chatting with the timekeepers about respective details or whatever, and really had no business even looking at the Jets bench. And I'm sure Maurice, he's a proud guy. He sees this referee staring at him.
Well, he's also, I mean, he's also emotionally charged.
Yeah, he's also furious.
He's one of his best players. Mm-hmm. And as Maurice said afterwards, it's not just a guy I work with. We work together every day. I know these guys, their lives,
their wives,
right?
Yeah.
This guy is having his neck x-rayed. Maurice feels, how is there no penalty? He's fired up, and then the ref is there waiting for him, baiting him. And you mentioned Carrie Frazier. Do we want to play some of the Carrie Frazier audio? Because he was on the station yesterday breaking down all of these
plays. Does a great job of breaking down both the Ehlers and the Brian Little hit. And, an interesting shift for Anton Strahlman. He got a couple good punches in the face from Wheeler, but they took a lot of runs at him throughout the game. It was really cool to see just the mentality of the Jets, saying anytime we can even touch this guy, he's going to be felt. He's going to feel it.
Right.
We do have those clips. Corey, can we fire the Ehlers first on the kneeing clip?
Oh, yeah. So this is the first penalty. A lot of people were really fired up about
this
Little.
This would bother me more.
And that's what I would say. If you were going to pick a play for a penalty, the Strahlman hit Little hit is a bad ending to a hockey play, but the Ehlers one, not so much. And Carrie Frazier was on TSN 1290 yesterday, former NHL ref, talking about that knee-on-knee hit Strahlman on Ehlers.
The leg-to-leg contact I saw in real time with a flash, and I didn't like the looks of it. As I saw a reverse replay on our TSN broadcast, I liked it even less. I think in that situation, Strahlman made himself bigger with his leg. He did try to deliver some shoulder with it as well, but it was leg-to-leg contact that slipped in between Ehlers' right leg. Those are dangerous. I hate them. I would have liked to have seen a penalty there for the knee-on-knee leg check.
And, of course, a penalty there would have stopped the play and negated everything that came after. Hindsight is 20/20. A lot of people wanted to see a penalty on the second hit. I have to admit, I don't know if there's a penalty to be, if there's a penalty to be called there. Let's listen to Carrie Frazier again explaining why he agrees there really, as the rules are now, no penalty on the Little hit, unfortunately for Jets fans.
In the second instance, and I absolutely, I must say, going into this, I hate the decision that players are allowed to make to hit a player that is vulnerable because that player is in a lowered posture. That being said, until they change the standard and the wording in the rule books even, that this is deemed to be a legal play when an opponent puts himself in a lowered position just prior to or simultaneously with a check. Anton Strahlman was committed to delivering a body check. The problem with this situation and the reason that Brian Little was put in a vulnerable position is because Victor Hedman was back-checking and with his long reach made contact, stick contact to the right side of Little, tapped the puck left, put Little off balance. He was looking to regain possession of the puck and dropped himself body position and head in a very vulnerable position. I don't honestly know if Strahlman could have pulled out of that check, but I did notice that Strahlman also, in an attempt to mirror the lower posture of Little, also dropped down in his posture. He was committed to the check. He slipped past the head and did make shoulder contact. The finishing look of the play is what we often see following impact, where a player will raise his appendage, but it is secondary and really isn't part of the check or the contact. It's more of a balance finish thing. As much as I hate it, it's deemed to be legal. And you know, the Rule 48 illegal check to the head, there's caveats in there that I don't care for, because it does cause the victim, in this case, Brian Little, to be responsible for being hit. If that was a spear that Anton Strahlman was running into with minor separation, I wonder, as skilled as all of these players are, if he would stop or turn or alter his path, recognizing that it would be vulnerable to him if he continued on that path.
So great to see the perspective from a guy who called hundreds of games in the NHL. You hear Carey Fraser breaking it down. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How about you guys? I'm Matt Leibel with Dave Minuch and Sean Assore. How do you guys feel looking back a couple of days later at these hits, specifically on Ehlers and Little from Strahlman, Dave?
Well, I'll be honest. I was incredulous that the Jets ended up down 5-on-3 after as the end result of all of that action. But I mean, I thought that the knee on knee for the hit on Ehlers, was a penalty. I don't think there's any question about it. And again, Little is just a hard play because the only thing I thought Strahlman could have done was pulled up. He had already committed to hitting Little. Little was moving in. Little just was off balance. I don't think it was a penalty per se. I just think that Strahlman could have made a decision to pull back when he sees someone in a vulnerable, you know, position. But again, hockey happens so fast.
So fast.
I mean, you know, we all see that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, it's very easy for me reflectively to say, well, this is what should have been done. It's a lot different of a story when you're on the ice. So,
yeah, totally. He was probably lining up that hit before Hedman even made contact with Little and or the puck. But he's also probably, I'm not going to say on edge, I'm talking about Strahlman, but he's probably a bit fired up in the sense that he just took a run at a rookie, a highly skilled rookie who's known around the league as, you know, a shifty, smaller forward in Nikolaj Ehlers. He's probably expecting a physical altercation based on that hit alone. He's probably expecting someone to either bump him, come up to him, say something. You know, they wouldn't drop the gloves over that. Maybe they would. I don't know. Wheeler's dropped the gloves over less. But nevertheless, he's probably already on edge based on the fact that that hit happened, what, was like a minute? Maybe.
Not even.
So he sees another hit presenting itself. He's fired up already. He's probably like, yeah, I'm going to take a doubled run at this team. And then the whole trip, like, you know, the reach and the leaning forward transpires. Little puts himself in a tough position. And he commits to the hit before, and he follows through with it. And everyone's saying about the arm being raised. That's just physics. That's just contact of two big boys.
Like Dave said, he was already going for
hit. That hit was already in his mind. He was committed to that hit regardless of the position Little found himself in. It's really scary when you see a guy lying on the ice, not moving a smidgen of his body, and there's fights going on around him and mayhem. And that's the scariest part, is when you see a guy like Brian Little on the ice, unable to move very, very well.
Understandable, yeah. Right? There is some good news. The Jets have been on the ice already today, and Paul Maurice has spoken already today. Later on in the show, we're going to bring you some of his comments. Brian Little, it's not looking like a long-term injury as of today, day-to-day. Not expecting him to go tonight, mm-hmm. but when the Jets are back in town Tuesday in Dallas, it wouldn't be crazy to see Brian Little, thankfully, amazingly, back in the Jets lineup. The Jets take it on the Panthers at 6. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. What are the keys to ending this road trip with a win? We'll take a look at tonight's matchup when we return. Matt, Dave, and Sean with you. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. George Richards is with the Miami Herald. The Jets are in the Miami area tonight. Seems like it would be a good idea to talk to George. Coming up in about 8 minutes. We'll hook up with them. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. A little different lineup today. No Drew, no Richard, no Ezra. Instead, you've got myself, Matt Leibel, Dave Minuch, and Sean Assore. We started talking about Thursday night's affair in Tampa. Now let's move over to tonight's game, guys. After all, it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day and a 6 o'clock start Jets at Panthers. Panthers, I think you would consider one of the more surprising teams of the NHL season.
Totally.
Maybe an argument for the most surprising team of the NHL season. I know I had him as a playoff team, but I was thinking wild card, maybe third in the Atlantic. And there they are leading the Atlantic with a really incredible mix of young talent and veteran experience, more than just Jaromir Jagr, Luongo, Sean Thornton. You look at the matchup tonight, Dave. What are some keys for you for the Jets who are going to be without Brian Little but have everybody else as they go tonight in Florida?
Well, I mean, it's the truth is they can't really change much of what they've been doing anyways. I mean, this team is what it is, and they have their strengths. And the fact is, and you'll hear, and you hear the players say it every day, we're doing what we need to do. We're just not getting the results. Okay, so then you'd say, well, if you're not going to change anything, that's kind of insane. But the fact is that they're getting their opportunities. I mean, look in Tampa. They had, you know, sometimes you just can't beat a hot goalie, right? Although it proved otherwise later on in the game. But I'm just saying that, you know, I just don't see, especially because now you've got Andrew Kopp coming back into the lineup. Your fourth line may give you something. I mean, I don't see it. So really, you're going to be heavily reliant on your top couple of lines to really get it done for you this against this Florida team. So I really think they just have to minimize Florida's chances. And to be honest with you, the number one thing, without a question, is discipline. You just can't take penalties.
Oh, we're going to play this record again? It feels like it's on repeat since
it does
2014.
I understand. Yeah. I understand why you may say that.
Yeah,
yes.
Discipline is obviously extremely important for the Jets. Just looking at the Florida Panthers power play here, 28th in the league. So nothing too scary to...
But if we've learned anything...
That
weak
could
power plays
to,
get yeah, going against yeah, the
that
Jets.
Could, that
so.
Could jump to 25 as of 9:30 this evening. So, but the Panthers are releasing a press release here that they've recalled a couple noobs to their roster. Defenseman Michael Matheson, Kyle Rau, forward, both from Portland, going to be playing in their first games for the Panthers today due to the injured roster that the Panthers have right now. Specifically, I believe Barkov is out for the season.
Is he out for the season?
Maybe not the season, but I know he's on IR. He's on the IR. So, and Bobby Lou, Roberto Luongo returning to the net today for the Panthers,
which is good actually. Dustin Byfuglien, I think Roberto Luongo might be Buff's favorite goalie to shoot against. Do you guys remember?
Or to stand in front of.
Right.
In the playoffs.
Well, of course, everyone remembers Vancouver and Chicago back in 2010. Do you guys remember the game last season where Matthew Perreault scored 4 goals and was going for 5 and the million-dollar winner and everything? Earlier in that game, Buff scored a couple of goals on Luongo. Mm-hmm. So touching on Luongo being back in the net, he may, Sean, have wanted to take one more day because it's just one of those situations, you know. Some guys like to see certain teams, certain goalies, and I think Buff could be in for a big game tonight against Luongo.
Yeah, be fired up, especially after what transpired in Tampa Bay a couple of days ago.
Right.
And maybe Gerard Gallant is, you know, I listened to his press conference today. He said, you know, Al Montoya has played great while Roberto's been sidelined. And maybe, you know, it could have helped maybe Luongo just to leave Al Montoya in for one more game, but who knows? Maybe he didn't want to put up our former goaltender against his former club. It would have been a funny little interesting matchup to watch.
You mentioned Gerard Gallant. I believe the last two coaches in the NHL to get tossed from games are Paul Maurice and Gerard Gallant.
Oh, fireworks.
It's not the sort of thing you see, but I wonder if we'll see both get tossed from tonight's game. Probably not. I imagine they're going to behave themselves.
Maurice, for sure. He has to be on his best behavior now. It's like when you come off being grounded and you want to like break another rule. Well, I'm talking. I don't get grounded.
I was saying
anymore.
You sounds like you're speaking from
Sean,
experience.
Sean, how currently have you been grounded?
I'm currently grounded. I was allowed to come onto the show, but I have to go home immediately.
Well, good to have you with us, Sean. Coming back with George Richards of the Miami Herald for more on tonight's matchup between the Jets and the Florida Panthers. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. New look lineup today, temporary, unless we do really well, I suppose. Matt Lyle, Dave Manouk, and Sean Assor with you. It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day tonight at 6, Jets at Panthers. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. George Richards is a beat writer covering the Florida Panthers for the Miami Herald. Let's bring him on and talk to him on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Hey, George, how are you?
Hey, how are you today?
We're doing well. Not as warm as they are in South Florida, but we're actually doing okay for Winnipeg, so it's not too bad.
Yeah, good. Very nice. It's a nice day here, though.
So. Yeah, well, that's to be expected. So, George, we brought you on, obviously, to talk about the Panthers. And right now the Panthers are holding about a 5-point lead over the Bruins and for first in the Atlantic. Would you have envisioned this at the beginning of the season?
Oh, absolutely not. No, I figured as many did that the Panthers would be in the mix. I mean, you look at how deep, especially coming into the season, how deep the Atlantic Division looked, and with Tampa Bay obviously going to the finals last year, and Montreal, Boston, Detroit, Ottawa even. You figured the Panthers would be in the mix, but you didn't think that they would be atop this division. Obviously, we didn't know, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen in Montreal. It's been a big surprise. They've played well. This team seems built for the future, built to be successful for the long term. I don't think this is a fluke or a one-time thing. I mean, this team is definitely one of the better young teams in the NHL, and, you know, they definitely have some older players who are playing key roles. But this is a good young team that has a bright future, and, you know, but as far as did we think it was going to happen this soon, no.
Keeping on the surprise side of things, you know, you got Vincent Trocheck. He's fourth on your team right now and scoring 36 points. He's centering the top line at line rushes today. What's his emergence been like for the club?
I think the emergence of Vincent Trocheck has been huge. This is a kid that last year finally got a chance to become a full-time NHL player, but was still, you know, he was going back and forth. You know, he didn't really have a home. He was playing wing. He was playing center sometimes, third, fourth line minutes. Healthy scratch every once in a while. You know, just wasn't a guy that was counted on or relied on last year. Put up some, you know, decent numbers for the minutes he got. But this year he's really excelled. He's been given an opportunity, and he's taken it and run with it. And they're real excited about the prospects of Vincent Trocheck moving forward. They're working on a 5 or 6 year extension with him, and then they want to keep him around for a long time. He's RFA after this year, so it's not like he's going anywhere, but they definitely want to keep him around. I mean, he's got great speed, great skill, real confident kid, and he's very confident in his abilities. And when he gets going, I mean, he can blow past defenders, and he's got a terrific shot. He's got a great nose for the net, and is just a fun guy to be around this team. So he's one of those guys that maybe a lot of people don't know about. I mean, because when you talk about the young core of this Panther team, you talk about Huberdeau and Bjugstad and Barkov and those guys. But and I think sometimes Vincent Trocheck has been overlooked, but I don't think he should be, because you know, right now he's you know, with Barkov's injuries, he's been centering the top line, and then he's putting up the numbers, and he's really getting the job done for the Panthers.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're speaking with George Richards about the Florida Panthers. George with the Miami Herald.
So, George, the Panthers, with the trade deadline upcoming, are the Panthers going to be making any major moves, or will they just do some minor tinkers? And if so, what areas do they need to address?
Well, first off, they definitely are looking for some more forward help. They're definitely looking for some guys that can help them. It may be a veteran guy. They may go look for somebody like a Brandon Peary, who they pulled out of Chicago a couple years ago. That wasn't a major deal, but it turned out to be a pretty good one for the Panthers. Find a guy that maybe isn't getting playing time on his current team or can't find a home. Peary couldn't crack the Blackhawks line. Now, a couple weeks ago, I didn't think the Panthers were going to be very big players. I think the injuries that they've had recently, maybe they've changed that thought a little bit. Maybe they are going to be more active in this. I know Dale Talon likes being active. He's very active at the trade deadline over the years, and he's been able to pull off some pretty good deals. I think they are going to be active. They're just so banged up right now. They're going to get Barkov and Branson back probably next Thursday when they host Arizona, and that'll be a big help to them. But they're still missing some pieces. They'd like to get maybe another defenseman, but I think the price is going to be too high for that. So I just wouldn't be surprised if they bring in a forward or two.
Now, George, it's interesting you talk about looking to add someone. A few weeks back, Andrew Ladd's name came up, and I know I saw a tweet from you saying that you hadn't heard anything on the Florida side. Has that changed? Because it seems like there are still conflicting reports that Kevin Cheveldayoff and Dale Talon may be discussing at least a deal for Ladd to go into the Panthers.
I was told zero interest in Andrew Ladd, and that was about a month ago, and I think you're right. I think maybe things have changed. I mean, I saw saw Dale and a couple of the scouts that were there for Winnipeg on Thursday night talking by themselves in the corner. I don't know what they were talking about, but that definitely got my attention when you see two scouts from Winnipeg talking with Dale. I think there may be some interest, but I think for the Panthers to do something with Andrew Ladd, I don't think it would be a rental situation. I think it would have to be kind of a sign and trade kind of deal where they know that they would have Andrew agreeable to a contract extension, because the price is going to be high. I mean, Winnipeg knows that there's a lot of people that would like to have Andrew, and I don't think the Panthers if the Panthers knew he was coming here and he was going to stay here, maybe a hefty price is worth it, but just to bring him in for 2 months, I don't think they would be amenable to that.
So George, the question is really, in your mind, how far can this team go in the playoffs, and are they a potential Stanley Cup contender?
Well, I mean, it's so hard to see because we've seen this team in the playoffs. I mean, the team that made the playoffs, that won the Southeast Division back in 2012, there's only two or three players left from that team. It's a whole different team. So this is a team that has a lot of veteran guys who have been in the postseason, but you've got a lot of young kids who have never played in a playoff game. So you don't know how they're going to react when those lights are on. But I tell you what, last year, at the end of last year, had the Panthers made the postseason, they were in it till about the final 10 days of the season. They had an opportunity, a chance, to get in there. They just were a little bit too far out. Regardless, the way they were playing at the end of last year, I think the Panthers would have been a hard out. I don't think a lot of teams would have liked to play that Florida team. They're a very tough team to play. I think you got to realize when you get into the playoffs, there's no more of this 3-on-3 in overtime. There's no shootouts. This is a team that can play, good defensive hockey, good playoff-style hockey. I think they'll be a tough team to play in the postseason. Well, now, are they a Stanley Cup contender? I don't know. I mean, they're, the number two ranked team in the Eastern Conference, so maybe, I guess, sure. But, you never know what'll happen in the playoffs. I think you've seen so many teams, you've seen eight seeds upset the one seeds and that kind of thing. And that's what makes the Stanley Cup playoffs so much fun is it's not like the NBA where you can pretty much, at the beginning of the playoffs, tell who's going to be in the finals. In the NHL, you don't know who's going to make it. So, but I think the Panthers are built to be a team that'll be very tough to play when the playoffs come around.
Our guest is George Richards of the Miami Herald, talking a little Florida Panthers here on TSN 1290.
George, it's Saturday. I know it's a work day, but let's have a little fun. We're going to play a game of fill in the blank. I'm going to give you a statement. I want you to fill in the blank, okay? Jaromir Jagr has been blank for the Florida Panthers.
Amazing. we were talking about him yesterday. I mean, the Panthers had no idea he was going to have the impact that he did when they got him. I mean, they got him. They gave up a second-round pick last year in New Jersey. We saw at the end of his tenure in New Jersey, he was being misplayed. He was a fourth-line guy with the Devils, very unhappy. The Panthers bring him in, put him with two kids younger than him combined. Their combined ages are younger than he is, and it really seemed to rejuvenate him. And his impact, it's immeasurable, the impact that he's had on this game.
Double J, he's one goal away from tying Brett Hall for third all-time in career goals. I've got a sick feeling that may come tonight. Do the Florida Panther fans understand how impressive of a feat this is for Jaromir Jagr?
Yeah, I think they do. I think people realize, I mean, when you look at the – and it seems like Roberto Luongo always jokes, it's a milestone a night between Luongo or Jagr. One of them is always passing somebody in some kind of all-time list. And it really is neat to see the names that these guys are passing. And Jagr's, one goal away from Brett Hull for third all-time. I believe he's 10 points away from Gordie Howe in points, overall points. When you start naming the names that these guys are coming up against, this is like, being mentioned in the same sentence as Babe Ruth. I mean, these are just hockey icons and then the biggest and the names everybody knows, the Gretzky's, the Lemieux's, the Gordie Howe's. I mean, it's just to have these, you know, have Jaromir Jagr's name with those is just, it does resonate with people down here because they may not know hockey, but they do know the names and they know those legendary guys. So, yeah, people are definitely taking notice.
So, George, that leads perfectly into my question, which is about the fans in Florida. I've noticed the attendance is up about 4,000 on average per game, and I know mm-hmm. the team has gone a long way in terms of eliminating freebies, so those are actual people who are paying to be there, which is a good thing. What's the fan reaction been to the team overall? Are they, is this team being embraced in South Florida?
It's slow. I mean, yeah, I mean, attendance is up 30% from last year, and like Deb Sifu, one of the team's owners, like to say, and all of them are paying their way in here. I mean, that's a big change from years past when the stacks of tickets were going unused. But now people are actually paying for these seats, which they are very happy about. It's still slow a little bit, you know, because they're still trying to grow the season ticket base. So you're still depending on a big walk-up crowd every night. And that, you know, when you have teams from faraway markets like Thursday night against San Jose, that's not a traditional draw down here. So you didn't have a very good crowd. You had maybe 14,000 people announced. There's probably about 11 in the building, but you know, so it's still taking time. I think they're getting much more attention, much more buzz, much more traction in this marketplace. I think people are realizing that this team is, you know, being built to win, and they are winning, and they're doing it on the ice. It's not just words anymore. Their actions are bigger than their words right now. So people are definitely paying attention. It's a slow process, but it's a process where it's definitely moving forward. Anytime you can increase your attendance by 30%, you're doing something right.
George, we really appreciate your time this afternoon. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's George Richards, Florida Panthers beat writer of the Miami Herald. Matt Leibel, Sean Asor, and Dave Manuk with you on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Jets face the Panthers tonight at 6. Don't forget to check your local TV listings if you want to watch the game, or you can listen right here, Clean Line Jets Hockey on TSN 1290. Jets going to be without Brian Little tonight. A lot of people were expecting to be without Brian Little long term. Amazingly, that's not the case. Paul Maurice will explain when we return to the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit their website, lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Welcome back to our show. A little bit of a different lineup today. No Ezzy. Feels weird to take a shot at him when he's not in the room, but I didn't write it. I just read it. My name is Matt Leibel, and it's my pleasure to be joined in studio by Dave Manuk and Sean Asor on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. The countdown is on, 6 o'clock tonight for Clean Line Jets hockey. The Jets are taking on the Florida Panthers. And the Jets have already been on the ice this morning for their game day skate. Their coach addressed the media after the skate. I think a lot of people were curious to hear an update on Brian Little. Of course, injured in Thursday's game, day off yesterday, so we didn't get anything. And I won't lie, I was expecting 4 to 6 weeks, rest of the season. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We heard he had his neck getting x-rayed.
Yeah.
Amazingly, Brian Little is just day-to-day. He'll miss tonight's game, but he could be playing Tuesday night against Dallas when the Jets are back home. For more on Little and tonight's matchup, let's hear from the coach, Paul Maurice.
Can you tell us about Brian Little?
Brian's not playing tonight. They don't list him as day-to-day. If we were at home, maybe a little more optimistic for our next game. He's got a four-hour flight to deal with, so we'll see how he comes off that. But we'll just leave him at day-to-day, but he won't go tonight.
How about for Matty Perreault getting a chance in that role?
Well, you know, that stems directly from his last stint at center in January when we lost all our centermen there for a bit. He came in and played really well there, so he'll get that spot. We've got a couple other places that we can move our center ice around tonight if we need to. But we liked his play in the third period in that hole.
Andrew Cobb comes back into the lineup. Can you tell us about anything about why he wasn't in the last game?
Yeah, I wanted to put Matty Perreault back at center ice and move Adam, change his minutes a little bit. That was it.
And Paul Postma got a chance to go in.
Yep.
How did you like his game?
I liked his game. I liked Adam Pardy's game as well, the game before. I liked Paul's game. And I also like the structure of our defense. So I want to give him I'm gonna keep these guys kind of coming in and out of the lineup. I don't want to pull them. I don't want to rotate them every game. I've got to try to build some confidence there on the back end with these guys. But I like the way the rest of our defense sorted out with Paul in the lineup, and I liked his game.
What's Florida done so well this year to be atop of their division right now?
Well, they defend awfully well, and they move the puck. They've got an awful lot of speed. Pretty creative off that rush, and but I sum it up, really, really good sticks. You know, they knock a lot down, they make a lot of good plays, and they get some pretty darn fine goaltending night after night.
Hutchinson in goal tonight?
Yes.
Well, your team produced some passion and anger in that game the other night for a variety of reasons, I'm sure. How do you drive it back up to that level today? Do you need to do anything or say anything to them?
So this is a conversation that didn't start couple of days ago, and it's been a theme, and it's our challenge, and getting to the level that we need to play at to have success to compete sometimes is a learning process. It's not an easy thing to do, and we're going through that process right now. So that's our challenge night after night in the NHL. Our team has to come out and compete at an exceptionally high level. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a lesson that we've got to make it ours. We've got to make that who we are. So we get another great opportunity to do it here tonight.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice from earlier this morning after the game day skate ahead of tonight's tilt with the Florida Panthers. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. So with Brian Little out tonight, guys, that top line is going to have Matthew Perreault with Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers. Perreault taking Brian Little's spot. Dave, what kind of expectations do you have for that trio tonight?
You know what? Perreault is very dynamic, and I think he slots in fine as the number one center with those two guys. I mean, he's played with Ehlers before, so he has a chemistry already from earlier in the season. I think he's a very dynamic player, so I think that he'll just add to that line. He sees the ice extremely well. He facilitates extremely well, and you've got two guys who have very good shots. And so I think he'll be able to get them the puck, no problem. And I think it'll be a pretty seamless transition from Little to Perreault.
For me, guys, if I had to pick a forward I was going to be watching, though, it wouldn't be one on that line. It'd be Andrew Ladd again. Andrew Ladd was amazing on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Maybe his best game of the season. And when you think about it, if you're hearing the argument he took a while to recover from that hernia surgery, the way his season has gone really kind of adds up to that. He was, dare I say, bad for 20, 30 games. But in his last 25-ish games, he's actually really come on. And maybe his last 10 have been really, really good. He drove that third period comeback. And if the Jets are going to try and find some of the lessons and consistency we just literally heard Maurice talking about, who does it need to come from? How about the guy wearing the C on his chest? I know his future is uncertain, but it doesn't hurt anyone, Andrew Ladd personally or the team. It doesn't hurt anyone if he gives us another game tonight like he did Thursday night, Sean.
Yeah, he sparked that team, no doubt, Thursday. He didn't take the game day skate in the morning, so he was a little banged up to begin with. Two goals, an intense forecheck throughout the entire game, a fight.
Loved that fight.
A fight.
Where he had like his head turned and wasn't facing.
Yeah. He was in a bad position of that fight for a while.
And he hung in there.
Survived a couple pretty scary incidents. Interesting to note, he's going to play alongside Scheifele and Armia. So they keep Ladd and Armia together, who Lowry was centering for a while there. And Maurice has spoken about liking that line. And then, of course, Ladd and Armia hooked up for that shorthanded goal.
Right.
A great work by Joel Armia behind the net, fighting off, I think, three Lightning defenders. So keeping them together. Michael Hutchinson looks to be getting the start in net this evening over Andre Pavlik.
I wonder if that has anything to do with something you guys were touching on earlier, that if you look at Thursday night's game, there was so much coming out of that game that it overshadowed Pavlik giving up five goals and a couple of them really ugly goals. Hutchinson, last time he was in net, help me remember, guys, when was the last time Michael Hutchinson was in net?
He played at home. He came in for the Carolina.
Like when Hellebuck was still with the team.
A couple
weeks ago on the Friday when they got lit up early.
He got a start recently.
Maybe he started
he played the game against Boston.
I was going to say he played against Boston. Perhaps Boston.
He came in for Boston. He started the game against Colorado.
On the road.
Yes. That's right. He started that game against Colorado. You're right. It's been so long. He started the game against Colorado, and then he came in. I think he came in for the Boston game. Now I'm drawing a total blank.
Right, but it's Michael Hutchinson. What a tale of two seasons from last year to this year for Hutch. So it looks like he's getting the start tonight for the Jets. Give Pavlik a little break. He hasn't been super sharp. He had a couple of good games coming back. But even against Edmonton in that first game back, it was having seen Hellebuck and how quiet and solid he is in the net versus Pavlik's style, and how he really is, for lack of a better way to say it, flopping around all the time. I mean, he is really almost chaotic in the net, and I felt like he got away with some things in that game against the Oilers when he made his return in spite of getting the win. And I still hate how he handles himself in shootouts. He ends up basically on the goal line in these shootouts. I think it's okay to give Pavlik a break tonight, Sean.
Yeah, totally. And let's go back to that Edmonton game. You got Andre Pavlik in net in a shootout, something he's vocalized that he does not enjoy participating in. And then on the other end, in center ice, you've got Connor McDavid needing to extend the shootout, his first attempt in an NHL shootout. And Andre Pavlik gets the blocker poke check combo. I did not foresee that coming.
No.
I thought the opposite. I thought Connor McDavid was going to throw about 45 stick handles in and just make Andre Pavlik, his aggressive style of goaltending, look foolish. Boy, was I wrong.
So a couple of notes on tonight's matchup for the Jets against the Panthers. 6 o'clock tonight for Clean Line Jets Hockey on TSN 1290. Guys, we've really been approaching the Jets through this first hour like they should win tonight. But there's a whole bunch of people out there who would really rather not see that. Ed Tate has an interesting article in the Winnipeg Free Press about the old tank, the old losing with a purpose. And we'll look at that when we come back and kick off hour number 2 of our show. With Dave Manuka and Sean Assar, I'm Matt Leibel. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. Good afternoon, everyone. Just 1 o'clock on this Saturday afternoon on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. We are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A little bit of substitution going on today. Drew, Richard, and Ezra have all decided, you know, Jets are out of it. They're just going to take some time. They're just going to take some holidays. Good for them. And so they left the three of us here. I'm Matt Leibel, Dave Manuk, Sean Assar, and it's a pleasure to have you along on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. Jets Panthers coming your way tonight at 6. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or online at bernsteinsdeli.com. Fellas, we looked throughout a lot of that first hour, a little bit back at Thursday night in Tampa, a lot looking ahead to tonight in Sunrise against the Panthers. But it felt like the whole time we were looking at it from, got to get a win, got to get points, got to try and do something here in the last 25 games of the season. But for a lot of Jets fans, and I mean a lot of Jets fans, that mentality is not a reality. Many Jets fans out there, let's be honest, want to see this team tank, or as some people like to call it, lose with a purpose. I know Ed Tate was writing about this in the Winnipeg Free Press, but just off the start, guys, how do you feel about the whole notion of tanking? In general, maybe not even specifically for the Jets, Dave, but tanking. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, I think the this is the truth. You're not going to get players or a coach to care about tanking. And you're not going to get them to talk about it because their reality is what's in front of them and what's present. And so we've talked to Blake Wheeler about it in the room. We've talked about it with Andrew Ladd. And he goes, rightly so, why do I care what's happening 4, 5, 6 years down the line? I care about winning right now. I'm a professional hockey player. It's not in his contract anywhere to say you need to make this team good for the long term. It's about winning. I mean, that's what these guys do. So I can completely understand it from a fan's perspective. I understand, look, does everybody think that the Jets are much better off getting a top 3 pick than a 9 through 13, you know, finishing a point out of the playoffs? You had a slightly more entertaining season, and yet you're still short, and now you're picking somewhere in the middle as opposed to in the top. Of course, that makes complete sense from a fan's perspective because fans have a long-term view. They don't want to always, obviously. Like, fans want to win as well as the players. But they can also they have a longer period of time with which to work with. Players don't. Players want to win, and they generally want to win now, especially talking to players who haven't won a lot, like a Blake Wheeler or a Brian Little or a Tobias Enstrom.
Most of the guys in that room for the Jets.
I agree. So, and that's my point, is that so you're not going to get guys ever to admit that they care about tanking. So that's a non-starter in my mind. Like, you know, just it's no team is going to actively, whether the GM does it through purposeful design.
Well, I guess that's where people come in, right? That like the players and coaches, I think your point is 100% well made. That's not where the tanking happens. The tanking happens in the front office, right? Where you trade guys away, you give more ice time to younger players, sort of the sort of stuff that the Leafs are doing, right, by moving Kessel and Phaneuf out, that sort of thing, right?
I mean, there's no question. I watched the Leafs play the Moose. Well, it's probably interchangeable.
No, you're right.
But I watched the Marlies play the Moose on the Saturday, and then on the Tuesday night, the Leafs, in air quotes that you can't see me doing, against the Flames, and I was looking at some of the scorers. It was the same team. So, I mean, and Patrick Williams had an interesting tweet. He said, I wonder if any team has finished 30th in the NHL, but first in the AHL. So it's great that the Leafs are, the Marlies are doing well, you know, because that's fine. But the Leafs look like the Austin Matthews winner. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different this year, the way it's weighted and all that. But the fact of the matter is the Leafs are going to have a top three pick because they're purposely saying we're going to have a long-term outlook. And, of course, it sounds like an Austin Matthews could have a changing effect right away, which is what, getting back to the talk about Jets fans, what they want. They want that player that's going to have transformative ability on a team that needs it. I mean, look, let's be realistic about this team. You've got Anthony Peluso in the lineup on a regular basis. Now, I'm not besmirching Anthony, I guess maybe I am a little bit.
A little.
But he's in Florida, so it's
just
fine.
Just a little.
But I'm just saying that he's not a regular NHLer. Like, he's you can put him into the lineup if you need him, if there's a reason to have him in the lineup. But he shouldn't probably be an everyday NHL player. So, you know what I'm saying? So Jets fans want, and I hear it every day. I read about it, you know, when they go to the website. The fact of the matter is they just want to win, and they want to have a player that's going to help them do that. I mean, we're just as a quick aside, Kyle Connor.
Well, I was going to ask you about
first
him.
First-round pick in 2015 for the Jets. I mean, he had 2 goals, 1 assist. He's leading the NCAA. He's got 51 points in like 27 or 28 games. 17-point game streak. That's what Jets fans want. They want someone to be excited about. So I think that if you have a player like of Austin Matthews caliber or a Tkachuk or a couple of the, you know, the Finn options, you really give this team something to look forward to down the line this season.
Yeah, excellent. Excellently put, Dave.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, like these guys are the proudest of the proud when it comes to pro athletes. Mm-hmm. And to ask them, and they're not dumb guys. You're going to, you know, if you put together an AHL roster for an NHL game, the vets and the guys on the team will look at that roster and they're going to know what's happening. Like, they're going to know the intent of this roster, right? Dave, I believe it was on Wednesday when you guys had the midweek.
Yep.
And you were saying, you ask Blake Wheeler in a scrum about tanking, he'll rip your head off.
Right.
You can't ask these guys to do that from an athletic or a coaching perspective. Yeah, it comes from the managing, but I don't think the fan base want a top three pick. You know, they want the Finns or Austin Matthews. But will the fans even show up if we got 15 games left and we've lost the last 7 in a row? And, oh, don't worry, guys, reinforcements are on the way as of the draft in 2016. Will the fans even embrace that notion? Like, it's lose-lose, I think.
Well, it's an interesting notion, right? Saying, who are the fans that are calling for this? Are they the fans that are
at the games?
Are they the ones at the games? Are they the ones? And I don't know. I have no idea one way or the other. I'm just asking the question. Are those the fans that are supporting this team? And I mean, there's different ways of supporting the team. And you can, I'm not saying if you're a season ticket holder, you're a better fan mm-hmm. than someone who doesn't. It's just obviously different. But I'm just curious to know, like, are the fans who are paying, because let's be realistic, it's a tremendous amount of money.
Tons.
You want to pay $150 to go see a Dallas Stars team. Okay, Dallas is, you know, they're playing on Tuesday, I believe, right, against here in Winnipeg.
Right.
And you've got, you know, a lot of firepower on the Dallas side. Do you really want to see the Jets, you know, kind of doing what the Leafs are doing and having their AHL guys from the Moose coming up and playing, and then that's the team you're supporting? So it's not an easy, like, again, people say, do it, because it's going to be help the team long term. Well, that's easy to say, but are you putting up your $150, $300, whatever it is, to sit and watch these games? And again, short-term pain, long-term gain. It's easy to say that. It's another thing to actually put out the money and have to go to these games, you know, when it could be minus 20 out. I mean, right now, obviously, it's nice. Could be minus 20, and you're going to say, well, okay, I'm going to go watch the Moose play.
Yeah, if you're a family, and let's say you're a father, you take your wife, your two kids to a game, let's say Winnipeg, Chicago, and, you know, you got five AHLers in the lineup and maybe Michael Hutchinson in net, who knows. You're going to drop probably over $500 for a game. And then you got to explain to your kids why certain players weren't playing or why the Jets lost 7-2 or, well, son daughters, you know, your kids, we're going to get a good draft pick next year and I'll explain that to you next year. It's just like, it's lose-lose when you throw the four-letter word
in. You guys are saying it's hard to sell anything,
exactly.
Right? Like, you can't sell anything in the present. I get
it. And also, the Moose are playing a lot better as of late. They're really starting to seem to be getting it. I know obviously the record says otherwise, but I went to a few games last weekend and I've been starting to follow them as the players are starting to get it. And I think it would disrupt a really good learning curve for some of those young guys if all of a sudden, okay, boys, up you go.
Oh, that's a great point. I've always asked the question. People are saying, okay, well, trade Andrew Ladd. This is how you tank. You trade Andrew Ladd right away. You call up Chase DeLeo and Nick Petan and J.C. Lippon and Josh Morris. So you get rid of all of the Pelusos and Thorpe, and you let those guys play. And I said, but is that necessarily the best thing for Josh Morrissey?
Exactly. Like for Chase DeLeo, who's leading the team in points now, he's having a great rookie campaign. Okay, Chase, you've done great so far. Try it in the NHL.
Right. Just because the NHL team may be ready for you, you may not be ready for the NHL
team.
So I wonder about that, guys.
And, the truth is, the big knock against Atlanta was that they rushed their prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And they pushed them to... That's what I'm saying. The knock on was that, oh, well, Burmistrov, if he would have been allowed to play with, I believe it was Chicago Wolves, was their AHL team, then they would have had an opportunity to develop properly and learn the proper things. I can tell you right now, unequivocally, don't touch Chase DeLeo. Chase DeLeo is doing just fine with the Moose. You don't want it. And we'll talk about that later in the Moose segment.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, like, there's, to Sean's point, you're not pushing these prospects up. You know, I mean, realistically, you'll bring up a Patrice Cormier, a Matt Halaschuk, you know, John Albert. Those are the guys you're going to bring up. You're not bringing up Nick Petan because you're not doing what you did to him early on. You've got to let these guys develop. It's key. It's absolutely 100% key. And if you look at the stats, they bear it out. Players who play in the AHL eventually play in the NHL. And that's not to say you can't bypass it, but it's rare. So, I mean, and sometimes it's funny that fans have this, and again, this is now going to back to the longer outlook on kind of the greater view of Jets down the line. That's what you want to have, is you want to have prospects who have properly learned to play. There's guys, I mean, look, Nick Ehlers is a phenomenal talent. He is talent, but every once in a while you see some of his junior habits.
I think more than every once in a while. Well, he's 19 years old. He's gonna be, or maybe he's 20 now.
No, he just turned 20. But that's my point. So do you
and
want,
I agree.
And do you want more of that, or do you want to say, okay, well, you know what? We got Chase DeLeo, we got Nick Petan, we got Josh Morrissey. These guys are developing under Keith McCambridge in a proper system. Now, and again, the Moose are a whole other story. We'll talk about them in a bit. But I'm just saying that I think it completely would be detrimental to their development to bring them up at any point at this season.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We are Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, and Sean Assor. You hear Dave mentioning a Moose segment coming. In fact, in hour number three, just after about 2:15, we'll get into the Moose. And in fact, at 2:30, Jim Toth, Manitoba Moose color analyst, will join us. Also, Sean, earlier you were talking about how the Dallas Stars are the next team in town to face the Jets on Tuesday. Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News is going to join us later on in this hour. If you've got any thoughts on tanking, losing with a purpose, feel free to hit us up on Twitter. What are your handles, guys? I'm at Matt Leibel, L-E-I-B-L. Of course, there's the Illegal Curve. Dave, you say it. You know all this stuff.
I run the Illegal Curve one.
Well,
so
that's why.
Yeah, that's at Illegal Curve, and you can give us a follow. And personally, you can give me a follow. I see Dave.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I'm at the Sassor. S-A-S-O-R. All one word, the Sassor.
That's why I call him Sass.
There you go.
He's very sassy.
Yeah. And sometimes a little sassman-ass. When we come back, we shift our focus from the Winnipeg Jets to a couple other teams in the NHL. One team that started the season really hot. Lately, not. And then the flip. One team that started the season really poorly. Lately, they're one of the best teams in the entire NHL. We'll take a look at those two teams when we return. It's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day on the home of the Jets, TSN 1290. We mentioned heading to break that you can interact with us on Twitter. We may not read all of your tweets on air, but we read them, and the best ones do get read on air. Kind of like the one that Greg sent us in the break, Dave.
Greg Burnett said, as a season ticket holder, the idea of tanking repulses me. Which really goes to that idea that we were just talking about, is that if someone, like Greg, for example, is dishing out that kind of money, he doesn't want to. And again, it's I totally get the other side of the argument, and that's the way you have to like look at it. You can't just have your perspective, and that's the problem with a lot of people sometimes online or even in person, you know, water cooler discussion. You have your focus, and it's so single-minded of purpose, and you don't take into account what somebody else is having to do or go through or what. And again, like I said, so Greg, for example, is putting out X number of dollars. I don't know how many CTs got, but so the idea to him is repulsive because he doesn't want to have to sit there and pay for that kind of money to watch, you know, less quality hot players and then say, well, you know what, I know that in – and there, again, the beauty of this is people talk tank, and this is part of the problem. There's no guarantee you're getting a top pick. So you come back and you're like, okay, well,
you could get Luke Shen. You could get Zach Bogosian.
That's the whole point.
The Thrashers
again,
had a lot of them.
While you might have a player like a Connor McDavid, I'm not saying anybody's a Connor McDavid right now, but who comes in and can make an immediate impact, this guy, you know, whoever the Jets draft in 2016 in Buffalo might not be playing till 2018. You know, so, I mean, it's again, it's easy to say do it this year, but again, that still means that you still have to deal with this year and potentially next year.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 with Dave Minuk and Sean Assore. I'm Matt Leibel. It's great to have you in. Clean Line Jets Hockey comes your way tonight at 6. Jets at Florida Panthers. H&L will be in here at 3. At the bottom of this hour, Mike Hike of the Dallas Morning News will join us. We'll start looking a little bit ahead at Tuesday night's matchup. In fact, the Jets have a home-and-home coming up with the Dallas Stars next week. And we'll be talking with Mike about that again at the bottom of the hour. But let's look at let's get away from the Jets for a few minutes. Let's look at a couple of other teams of note in the NHL. Two teams heading in very opposite directions. And in many ways, they're the complete opposite trajectories of the season. At the end of October, the Montreal Canadiens were arguably the best team in the NHL, and the Anaheim Ducks were the worst. I think the Ducks had one win in October. And the Canadiens won all their games in October, it felt like. And then, well, stayed that way for a little while. By New Year's, though, things had started to shift. The Canadiens, long without Carey Price, were having trouble putting the puck in the net, and they were losing games. The Anaheim Ducks, still having trouble scoring goals themselves, but they were starting to win games. Since the calendar flipped to 2016, guys, it's been more of the same for the Canadiens, just brutal. And, of course, we know the other night things are getting even uglier with Michel Therrien calling out PK Subban. But for the Anaheim Ducks, and to be honest, I'm not sure how many people have been really, really paying attention, but listen to this. After winning just 11 of their first 30, the Ducks have won 19 of their last 27 games. Four in a row. They're second in the Pacific, fifth overall in the West, and just 2 points behind the LA Kings for the division lead. Since the beginning of December, they have the second best possession numbers in the league. And just to top it all off, in their past 13, a record of 11-1-1. Sean, before the season, a lot of people had the Ducks as one of your handful of Stanley Cup contenders. A couple months in, I think a lot of people were crossing them off the list. But now, the 20th day of February, and all those numbers I just told you, are the Ducks legitimate Cup contenders once again? And do they need to make some moves before the NHL trade deadline to accomplish that?
Well, based on everything you just said, I would say they are a very strong cup contender. And it doesn't look like they really need to make any moves. I mean, roster-wise, it's very similar, other than a few additions to the back end and a couple forwards, to last year's roster. And just the sheer volume of goals that they are pumping in now, you can't argue that they're not ready for the postseason. And like they say in hockey all the time, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And they're peaking at a perfect time. Maybe a month later would be actually a perfect time. But if they can continue this rolling into March and then into April, how can you not label them a favorite into the playoffs?
It's interesting you talk about, though, their roster. Some people in the offseason were really critical of the number of guys who were on last year's team that got to the conference finals who were shipped out and some of the new bodies brought in and the culture being affected. A lot of people kind of blame the slow start this season to that, right? Well, Carl Hagelin was traded for, and he's since been traded away. Kevin Bieksa was brought in. Who else? I'm trying to do this off the top of my head with who the Anaheim Ducks. Obviously, Getzlaff, Perry, and Kessler are all there. They moved out Emerson Edom, did they not? They moved out a number of guys.
Yeah, brought in Ryan Garbutt.
That's right. Garbutt is now new. I mean, he's been in this season. But there was some turnover. Who else?
David Perron.
David Perron is in the team now, right? With that was the trade for Hagelin, right? Yeah. So they've been making some kind of depth moves, and I wonder if there are more depth moves to be made between now and the deadline. Andrew Ladd could fit very nicely with the Anaheim Ducks. I have heard that as a possibility.
Yeah, there was just talk the other day. Mm-hmm. We had it in the papers about Andrew Ladd and would he be a good fit for the Anaheim Ducks? And I mean, it's look, you're getting a guy with a 2-time Stanley Cup, you know, champion who's clearly. And this is another key point, Matty, is that similar to Eric Fehr. Remember Eric Fehr was washed up. He couldn't do anything. He was done.
His shoulder was practically detached.
Exactly. And so the point is he had the surgery. He should have probably had the year off. But you know, he tried to come back. Wasn't effective. That Jets obviously didn't sign him that summer. And then I believe he was signed by Washington or Pittsburgh or whatever. But all I'm saying is that then you have a player like Andrew Ladd who has a major surgery, and a lot of times it shows that the numbers decrease after you've had that surgery. But the fact is, he's clearly playing, you know, extremely good hockey right now. And I think, to be honest with you, a team like the Ducks could add him, and you know, it would definitely give them a step up, because the fact is, what are you doing to get past L.A.? What are you doing to get past Chicago? What are you doing to get past Dallas? So that's the thing. If you're a team like Anaheim, and I guess the key is this, are you built to win now or are you built to win in the future?
Well, the Ducks are built to win, or they're trying to win now.
That's my point.
100%.
That's my point. Yes. So if you're built to win now, then why not try and win it now by adding one or two pieces?
And especially because the Ducks, a lot of people will tell you, have one of the deepest young defense groups in their system of all the teams in the NHL. And you always wonder, you have to trade young players, prospects, sometimes picks in order to get players, rental players or players at the deadline. The Ducks have those kinds of pieces you can trade. So it would seem to suggest that everything you were saying, Dave, they're good to go now. They need to do a little bit more because the Ducks are kind of like the Blues for me, or the San Jose Sharks used to be. Very good, but you were always worried about their ability to get past LA, get past Chicago. The Ducks, I think, in each of their last three playoff series, have had 3-2 series leads and lost. They certainly did last year against the Blackhawks. If I'm not mistaken, they did against the Kings. And they've done it against the Red Wings, too. So they need something to get them over the top. And you wonder if it'll be an Andrew Ladd or a Louis Erickson or someone else like that. Mm-hmm. What about that other team we started this conversation with? Not a cup contender at this point in the season, the Montreal Canadiens. We're talking about them here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. What do you do in Montreal? Yesterday, Michel Therrien and PK Subban were trying to downplay everything there. And I don't know if Michel Therrien gets fired. Mark Bergevin a few weeks ago said he wasn't going to get fired. I'm not even sure what firing him this late in the season would do. How about I back up and ask you this, Sean? Do you think that Montreal's problems are 90 to 100% because Carey Price hasn't been in the lineup? I mean, how much of this would be a non-issue if Carey Price were here? And so maybe you don't touch anything, and the next season you just kind of say, Price is back, all is good.
Yeah, it's obvious that his impact has pulled a 180 on this franchise. I mean, they rushed him back. That didn't work out very well. Now he's out for the season.
It depends if you read La Presse,
There's conflicting reports, but look at Montreal the past few years, you know, winning 3-1, 2-3, 3-4, you know, not very many goals get scored on the Habs. They can win games 2-1, 3-2, you know. Mike Condon, not working. Ben Scrivens, not working. The Montreal defense, not doing a great job keeping the puck out of the net or limiting chances. Now you got your head coach calling out their best defenseman, and then the best defenseman comes back and says, well, I don't really care what people say. I'm good. First of all, I got to say, PK Subban has handled this entire thing with the utmost of class. He's well-spoken. He addresses the media with a smile. He does a post-game interview yesterday in front of the 15,000 at the Bell Center. Ends on the I don't speak French. I'm going to butcher what he says, but he ends with, thank you, Montreal, in French. I don't know. Yeah. I'm doing a terrible
disservice. Just on a side note to your point about always go. Did you know that after the game in Colorado, Max Pacioretty ducked the media?
See,
and PK Subban went right up there. And Patches wears the letter, and PK Subban doesn't.
There's also reports, though, that no one asked for Pacioretty.
Okay.
So that
very
he
good.
Didn't duck, that no one asked for him. I don't know if I buy that, because who's not going to ask for the captain in that situation, especially, well, I guess if PK.
And he was in on that goal, too.
If PK comes out and talks, I guess you don't need to speak to Pacioretty, because he's the main character of that story. But interesting that he doesn't volunteer his services to the media.
I will say PK Subban is a really first-class type of player and person. And I've seen him in situations. I remember, I want to say 4 years ago, he was in the doghouse with the coach, and he came out and he chatted with the media for probably 15 minutes and then sat around and chatted with us afterwards for a while. And it was like, this is a guy who was just getting tar and feathered, and he sat out, took it, answered every question, didn't dodge any questions, didn't say next, just went at it, and literally after everybody put their mics away, sat around and chatted and wasn't afraid to, you know, he's a personality. He's what the NHL needs more of, to be honest.
Totally.
As opposed to less of. I love his personality.
I think
like if you could have more PK Subbans, the NHL would be one of the most popular sports in the world, because he's such he's dynamic.
Authentic. Can I say that he's got Evander Kane's got personality, but Evander Kane is not like PK Subban,
he's
right? Like,
he's genuine.
Exactly.
He's
a good ambassador.
If you've
for
got
the
a kid in the sport of hockey, you say, watch PK Subban play the way he plays. Maybe don't catch an edge at the blue line, but
it'll happen.
It happens.
It'll happen.
And how many times have we seen PK Subban do that move where he's got his puck on one stick, he's strong pushes off his edges, he's guarding a defender with one hand on his stick, and he usually gets around that defender, circles the net, passes it off, productive play. He catches an edge, and he comes out right away and says, listen, I caught an edge, it's on me. Like, he takes full blame for it, and then he comes out and says, someone goes, well, are you and Michel Therrien, is there a rift between you guys? And he goes, no. He just said, flat out denies it. He says, no. Therrien agrees. He says, no, we're fine. PK is a professional. We chat about this kind of stuff all the time. He says, and Therrien said it. He goes, I would have said the exact same thing with any one of my players, but because it's PK, and then he takes a pause and he goes, it's 1,000 times bigger. And I think that just says a lot about just how PK Subban is perceived.
And it is interesting to see how a lot of GMs may be putting it out there, trying to submarine Montreal a little bit with the Subban trade talk. Because, I mean, I can't see Montreal trading PK Subban. I just don't
That'd
see
be
it
insane.
Happening. But it's just interesting how, like, that's – and even PK was like, that'd be a big mistake. You know, like, he embodies what that team is all about. And I think to lose a player of that magnitude would be a huge error.
You wonder, though – because I've been with you the last couple of years, they've needed more scoring. And you wonder if they're going to just say next season will be fine when Price is back, or if they'll try to address some of their goal scoring issues. With Sean Assore and Dave Minuk, my name is Matt Leibel. It's a pleasure having you in on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Jets taking on the Panthers tonight at 6, but on Tuesday they start a home-and-home with the Dallas Stars. Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News will join us next. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.